Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
The disgusting flag.
And it starts right now.
Welcome back. Did you hear that, Goldie?
Did you hear? There was a hiccup of some variety?
No. Oh. Did you hear our new intro? Do we have that isolated cue, JC?
Yeah.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
Well earned. Battlefield promotion.
Thank you. Appreciate
That's
it.
Pays to be buddies with Craig. he did it in a heartbeat. But Goldie, we didn't want you to, and you didn't. You had a great reaction to that, by the way. You had the very 2022 reaction to that, and I applaud you for it, your bravery. JC and I have a little...
Kanye.
There you go. You blew it.
I'm focused on preparing. I'm not listening to that part.
Well, get ready to lose your focus because JC and I, mostly JC, put together a little treat for you here. Listen to this.
We built this Goldie. We built this Goldie on our podcast. Built this Goldie. We built this Goldie on our...
Who is that for?
You.
For you, buddy. Who else?
I mean, thank you, I guess.
Oh, here it is. What? Here it is. Guy who can't handle praise or compliments. Here
How
he is.
How is that praise to say we built
We are literally dedicating a song to you.
I mean, you just put my name in a song.
Yeah, well, clearly it's about you.
It's neutral.
And by the way, that is...
Hitch a Goldie head for the... I mean, you could do that. Listen, thank you. I know it was labor expended.
Very little by me, mostly by JC. But that was us. That was us singing for you. We sang.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
We laid it out there for you.
God, you guys are obsessed with me.
We are. We just wanted to show you how obsessed.
Thank you.
But
you stopped
preparing for a minute because that threw you off. We flushed Brady out of the pocket for that one.
First joke of the day.
Uh-oh.
That's a joke?
Took it all back. Yeah, here we go.
What's happening?
The image of Brady being flushed out
tribute,
of the pocket.
Your name was mentioned in that song in no context. And then the joke that was a mention. Okay. There's no rules today, anybody.
No rules.
And he's back. He's back. He had 7 seconds of enjoying that honor. Now he's back. Hey, well, let's start off tonight because we had a big week last week and we still haven't talked about it. So last week we had our podcast guest dinner. So we had almost every guest we've ever had on the podcast came out to dinner with us in a very inconvenient spot, as it turned out, in downtown LA. But it was really nice.
It was really fun.
The food was very good.
Yes.
And I just want to hear Goldie's takeaway from the whole evening. What did you think?
Well, first I begged you not to do this.
Yes. I remember that.
I didn't want to do it. And I begged you not to. You plowed ahead anyway.
I did.
Then the dinner, I think, was at what, 7?
Yeah, 7.
Six, seven.
So I want to say maybe around like 4:45, you call me and you say, "Hey, man, you know, I was thinking we could just get up and make a speech at the dinner." And so it's like, I don't want to do the podcast. We've established that.
Yes, well established.
I don't want to do the dinner.
Didn't want to do it.
Establish that.
Yeah.
So do you think I want to do the toast at the dinner I didn't want at the podcast I didn't want? So
I took a shot.
Know, I said that this is a spinoff of a show I hate. Yeah. No, I don't want. So not only now am I going to this dinner, but I have this burden that in front of this room full of very gifted writers and performers, I have to give a performance with
delivered.
No preparation. You didn't ask me. You didn't say 3 weeks before, hey, and let's also kind of roast everyone while they're there. You call me like so close to when we're doing
moments,
it.
Moments.
When I'm just trying to go, let me get enough sleep so when I can stay up till 10.
Right. Well, by the way,
so that was my first impression.
In that phone call, you had a very funny idea because you said that you were very honest, which I think is good. You were speaking your truth. You didn't want to do it.
No.
But then in that moment, you had a very funny idea, which was what?
Well, you said, well, I'd still like to give a toast to everyone there. And I said, well, then you give the toast, and at the end of the toast say, and now Goldie would like time to give a short rebuttal.
Yeah, which is a hilarious idea. For some, we're toasting all of our guests, and Goldie wants to rebut that.
Yeah, just so, to say it's not as great. I mean, it's like we're blowing smoke up our own asses, and then it's like, why?
Yeah, no, so I got up there, and I did my little song, Horse and Pony.
You wrote a lot. And by the way, it was very funny.
I did my little dog and pony show.
Yeah. And you clearly prepared a lot. Like for a week, and then an hour before you go, I'll put him up there too, so he can have an hour to prepare. So thank you for that.
What's more likely, that I was stoned all week and didn't think of it until an hour before, or that I'd been meticulously preparing?
I was told you wrote on the plane.
No, I did not. I wanted to, and I watched Top Gun Maverick instead. By the way, this is offshoot of that.
I think you said that.
Yeah, I did. But this is an offshoot of that. And Goldie, I feel like for some weird reason, maybe you haven't seen it yet, but you cannot tell me there's a better movie than Top Gun Maverick
this
year.
Haven't seen it yet.
Should be Best Picture. Oh, that's my bold proclamation. There's not a better movie than Top Gun Maverick this year. But so anyway, you came running onto stage when I said, and now with a brief rebuttal, Goldie, you ran up and it was so funny because I'm just sitting down. Like my ass had yet to hit the chair. And you start going, oh, I guess he can write jokes. Okay, that mystery's solved. And he can write a joke. And it was like you hit it twice in such a hilarious, funny way. Like before my ass had sat down, it was like, oh, sniped.
They were both hilarious.
And then your rebuttal was actually hilarious because you yelled at everyone saying they didn't deserve anything.
They didn't. What are we thanking them for? It's at least to do a podcast is at least neutral. Like you go, you're getting something out of it. You can forward it to a bunch of people and say, hey, I'm on this podcast. And we get something out of it, which is we get a podcast.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a clean transaction. It's not like I go to the supermarket, I pay for my groceries, and then I'm like, thank you for, ringing me up.
Right, begging.
I'm having a dinner of everyone who rang me up this year. Would you come? And then an hour before, I'm going to call my friend and ask him if he wants to give a toast after I've been writing for a month.
It would be a better world if we had a dinner for all the people who rang us up. I think that's a good idea.
So that's my first impression. My second impression is, because I've only met her twice in person, I always forget how tall JC is.
Oh.
Yes.
And then I'm like, oh, right, like I'm by far the smallest person in this city. Because there are several giants at this dinner.
Ian and
Kilborn.
And even Steve.
Levitan.
Both Steve.
Yeah, and Callahan. Yeah.
By the way, but did you also notice the phenomenon? It happened to me, I want to say, the over-under is 2.5 times during the night where people literally palmed my head out of the way so they could go and talk to JC. Like, I was just it was sort of like, oh my, here's someone I worked with a long time. Oops, he's pushing me aside. JC, okay, they're hugging. Yes. That's what this is all about.
JC was the star.
I wouldn't go that far.
Absolutely.
What impressions did you all have?
I mean, I had a great time. I met, that was my second time seeing you in person, but like just meeting all these people was really nice. I spent most of the evening with Craig, so I didn't get to talk to everybody.
Oh, tonight, JC sits next to me for the whole dinner because I make her.
But yeah, we had a great time.
Yeah, it was really fun, and we had talked about this a little bit at the time, but Family Guy writers, and I guess there were how many there? Five, four, five, six. We don't get to meet a lot of other people just because we've been on Family Guy for such a long time. So honestly, it was just nice to see like Steve and Danny kind of commingling with the Simpsons people and, you know, just everybody there, because I feel like that just, and I felt the same way for a really long time. I just didn't get to meet other writing staffs, other showrunners. Like you're sort of stuck in your own world. So I thought it was really fun for that reason. I thought the food was great.
Yes.
Food was very
so good. Yeah.
And the spot was awesome. Oh, and I have to say thank you to my assistant, Allie Raisin, who put all that together.
Allie.
And she
great
just
job.
Nailed it.
Well, so, I got to say thank you to you, of course, for you.
Yes.
Oh, that's
you,
not
Goldie.
What this
you saw
is about.
Through all the skepticism.
Oh,
you saw it through all the sniping, and you generously paid for it, so thank you.
Oh, come it was a great
on.
Night.
Let's hear me say cut this part out, but don't cut it. Come on, guys.
I will say that the most requested person for me to introduce them to was Gary.
Yeah.
Many people said, can you introduce me to Gary? I want to meet Gary.
Including in a Kilbourne in a hilarious way, because I went over there, I was saying hello to Craig, and Craig pulled me over and he's like, I really want to meet Gary Jannetty, but I want him to come to me.
Yes.
so which was hilarious because there were two tables. And so then I went over to Gary's table and I was like, because I'm laughing about what Craig said. And I said, Craig really wants to meet you, but he wants you to go over to him. And of course, Gary's like, he should be coming to me. It was so hilarious. So they met somewhere in the middle, like, you know, Arafat and Begin, and shook hands, and it was all... Oh, a very nice evening. Yeah. We had a good time.
Yeah.
We did.
And
one of those feels like it's the last.
Right.
And, and I still haven't figured out what your angle was on this yet, but it'll become apparent.
On this dinner?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's some hidden motive.
Oh, wait till you see what Sulcatan Productions has up its sleeve. I want a coin flip so my name could be first.
Right.
And by the way, hey, happy Halloween. This show is airing on Halloween.
Yeah.
So let me wish you a happy Halloween, Goldie.
Happy Halloween.
You love Halloween. I know. You always getting dressed up.
Do you have costumes, either of you?
No.
Good.
Okay.
That's the proper adult response.
Yeah, here we go.
Somehow Halloween has morphed. It used to be a day when I was growing up, and it was a day that you looked forward to, but certainly didn't give an inordinate amount of thought to.
No,
You would say, I'm going to be a clown.
I'm going
to be a ghost.
Yeah.
I am going to be the Hulk.
The Hulk was, that's the one.
Sure.
That's a good one. Yeah.
It wasn't a whole friggin' month with a wind up and then the adults being involved. And like if had anyone suggested to my World War II veteran dad, you need a costume. Like, I can't even begin to fathom the depth of the shaming he would have given this person.
Yes.
I'm an adult. I'm not wearing a fucking costume, Jerry. He would have hated it. But so, look, I get it's something, you know, after COVID, people want a reason to celebrate. I'm not going to shit on people. But so for the kids, it's a big deal. And my kids in particular, they get a month in advance, they start plotting what they want to do. And one of my kids wanted to be Will Ferrell's character from Zoolander.
Nice.
Yeah.
And the other wanted to be an anime character called Hatsune Miku.
Oh,
so,
nice.
God bless you.
I let my wife handle this, and then my mom said, I want to get the Halloween costume. So I said, you deal with them directly. I don't feel. So anyway, just know that.
Okay.
So here's a separate crisis that happens concurrently. So our kids share a room, and, you know, there's clothes everywhere in the room, and we're picking up the clothes. My kids are 11 and 6, and we find a black thong.
Whoa.
Underwear.
Whoa.
And so we are kind of going, where did this come from?
Yes.
Like, did they secretly buy it? Did someone give it to them? Have they been wearing it?
There wasn't a tense moment for you, though, with Steph, right?
Oh, I thought about that too, but she didn't. She didn't say
she
like,
knew.
"Where?
She knew.
Where?" Yeah. When am I not home?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm very accounted for my time.
Right.
And so we, you know, Steph and I had this discussion of like, how are we going to approach this? You know, we don't want to like freak them out, but we want to get the information out. So, anyway, we show it to our kids and they're like, oh, you found the eye patch. And we're like, what? And so anyway, I guess my mom had bought them some costume off Amazon and it came with a costume and they were wearing it on their heads as an eye patch. Thank God.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's the best ending to that story
that's
possible.
What I said. Yeah.
For real.
No better way to end that story.
Yeah. That I was concerned that it was like, we're going to have to go, oh, there's this man at my school who buys me gifts. It's like, okay.
Very scary, yeah.
Bullet dodged.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, I wore it to our dinner.
Save it.
Make the night
for the
more
next
exciting.
Segment, which is the scariest part of all of our Halloweens. Let's get in to Johnny Jokes. Happy All Hallows Eve to you out there. Well, of course, if you haven't been under a rock, you've heard this story. In the wake of a series of anti-Semitic remarks, Kanye West has been officially let go by his agents.
He gone!
Well, that's not going to improve his opinion much. Keeping on that story, because that went so well, a shoe company executive has claimed that Kanye West had an obsession with Hitler. Yeah. The executive added that the Hitler obsession made the meeting with Kanye incredibly awkward right up to the moment that they signed him anyway.
Got him.
Yeah.
And,
hypocrisy is rampant.
Rampant, and we like to point it out here. That's our job. Holding up a mirror and reminding you all that I am Jewish, therefore bulletproof with these jokes. Okay. As an effect, it seems, 9 different universities across the United States have created Jewish-free zones on campus. This is true. But luckily, they're in the gym, so nothing will really change much. Again, I am Jewish. I can say these
what
things.
What universities?
Yeah, it's terrible.
9 of them.
Wow.
What?
9.
That is crazy.
What does that mean?
Do I have an answer? 9. Hey, everyone.
That's funny.
Okay, let's close with this terrible one. A group of women are suing some of the largest skincare lines, claiming their products cause cancer. Ugh. A representative for the skincare giants has outlined their defense as, well, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline. Second, Johnny, take
right,
this bloody baton.
Here's some overlap. Well, Adidas, the shoe company, Adidas, has cut ties and terminated payment to Kanye West after the rapper made anti-Semitic remarks. Yeah. West vowed to find the best lawyers and bankers, and oh, he's in trouble.
Well done.
More bad news for Kanye. His fashions will no longer be carried by TJ Maxx. Yeah. However, West is still holding out hope he can work out a deal with TJ Min.
Nice. Yes, very Goldie.
Yes.
Love it.
All right. Well, Prince Harry's memoir will come out in January, and everyone is on edge for explosive revelations. Yeah. Even the prince himself says he can't wait to read what the guy they hired to write it says.
Nice.
Okay. And now here's a norm.
Yeah.
Here's a norm. Well, James Corden's brouhaha with the restaurant Balthazar continued into its second week. Yeah. First, Corden refused to apologize. Then he apologized, and explained he only lost his cool because the server screwed up his order 3 times. But skeptics point out a huge hole in Corden's story, that there's food he won't eat. Yeah, I got one more.
Awesome.
A bonus Yanni. Okay, Ooh. Here we go. Well, inflation is running rampant. Yeah. And Chipotle has increased the price of its menu 15%. And the move has sparked concern among economists that the average American will soon be unable to afford diarrhea.
Is there a better word to end on than diarrhea? I don't think so. Diarrhea into the music. Cue music. Diarrhea.
I was proud of the Corden one.
Yeah, that was really great.
That was, I mean, it was a long walk with a big payoff. So yeah. That's good.
I was like, this is the one angle on the story I actually haven't heard.
Yeah, sure.
It's a funny way to bust him.
Yes, fat shaming him. I agree.
Well, not well. As I don't even think we talked about it on the podcast, but you and I talked in person because we addressed this.
Yes,
last week
we did,
and I discovered that I have a personal connection to the server.
Yes.
I don't want to elaborate much further.
Okay,
for your own safety,
that completely bolsters the credibility of all the restaurant's accusations.
Wow.
I now 100% believe every word of the restaurant.
Dope.
That's great.
Inside dope. By the way, Goldie, what you couldn't see and you probably just couldn't even perceive when I threw into the middle of your sentence for your own safety, you gave the weariest blink. It was as though you had been hit by a wave of radioactivity.
What did he say for my safety?
Well, no, because you were like, I can't reveal much more about my connection with this person. For your own safety, and you gave me a weary blink. Like, yes, I am speaking now.
It's just hard enough to come up with things to say.
I know. You come up with great things.
Then there's interjections. You know, because I'm thinking, again, the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right up until the podcast.
Yes, absolutely. That's why you were blindsided by the new intro. We're going to talk about this week the Friends pilot. In the past, we've talked about the Cheers pilot. We've talked about the pilot for the British Office. But today, we're going to talk about the Friends pilot. But before that, I want to get back into our incredibly unsuccessful football picks. I don't know what we are, but we're both tied and we're both 500.
I think we're above 500. I think we're each 3-2, maybe.
I think we're 3-3.
No, but
maybe.
Okay.
All right, whatever we are, we're tied. So that's all. That's all
yes.
that matters.
Yes.
Okay. So do you have a pick for this week? Okay,
I do.
What is
and
it?
And I don't want to prolong my agony. We're recording this on a Thursday. I'm taking the game tonight.
Oh.
Thursday night game. I'm taking the Ravens are getting 1.5 points against the Bucks.
Yeah.
I think the Ravens will beat the Bucks.
Yes.
Or if not, they'll lose by one. So
I would think so too.
I'm taking the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm taking one that scares the shit out of me because it looks so wrong that it has to be right. I'm taking the Tennessee Titans, who are giving 2.5 on the road in Houston. So I think the Titans will beat the Texans by a field goal or more.
I looked at that.
I know, but it's scary because they must know something. They know something.
The slate is scary this week. First of all, last week I took the Jets on the road and won, which is insane.
Amazing.
Nice. Yeah. Congrats.
Amazing.
So maybe this is the season that the scary stuff works.
Yeah, maybe you're right. In which case I should have picked Houston, but I did not. I picked Tennessee. All right. So that's the part of the show that people maybe like less than any other part, but we got
Good.
It out of the way.
You got
Good.
It out of the way.
Hate it.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, so now let's talk about Friends, and let's start by, let's set the scene a little bit here, because I did my research, as you guys know that I love to do. Friends premiered in September of 1994, where if you were going out to the movies at that time, you might have seen Pulp Fiction, Shawshank, Forrest Gump. If you were listening to the radio, it was mostly garbage. It was sort of like late Boys to Men stuff that was just dominating. The Mariah Carey, kind of like her wave of dominance. And we were seniors in college, I think, for the most part. Or JC might have been, first year grad. I'm not sure.
Older.
I was already, I'd moved on to careers.
Wow. She could have taught us a thing or two. But so this thing came out, and I thought it was a phenomenon right out of the gate, because I feel like that's, Friends became an absolute monster hit, as we know. But I got a little inside dope from my friend Renata Radford, who used to be an executive at NBC with my wife Tal back in the day. And she said that Friends actually just did kind of like okay when it first premiered in the fall and then went through the first season. But then they reran them over the summer of 95 and it exploded.
Oh.
Like everybody weirdly watched the reruns for the first time and the show became a monster hit. I also heard a little thing that this was, again, like the Cheers pilot, was directed by Jimmy Burrows, mm-hmm. who's, you know, sort of known as the best sitcom director in TV history, I would say. But apparently he took the cast before they even shot the pilot and treated them all to a trip to Vegas. So they had like a Vegas weekend or a few days in Vegas together. And honestly, I have to say that was one of the things, we'll talk about what we liked and didn't like about the pilot, but one of the things I definitely did like was that they actually kind of did seem like friends. They had a chemistry together that you don't always get on new shows, especially.
Yeah.
And just to say, out of the gate, the show was incredibly well cast. Like, you can't argue with that now. I mean, they got all the people right in that show. But Goldie, do you have anything else to say about, like, before we get into it kind of thing? Or do you
want to just because you and I at that time were that age and we were in New York City. We were maybe a little younger than the cast, but we were supposedly living the life that they had on the show.
Right, exactly.
And it could not have been further from what they portrayed. So there's like a 0% accuracy.
Right.
So I think of Friends, and I going back to the pilot, I thought what was going to happen, because this wasn't a show that I watched at the time. It wasn't something I was interested in.
Right.
I really only watch it if I'm staying at a hotel for some reason, because I turn on the TV and it's on TBS and it's fine.
Yeah.
So I thought what would happen would be I would go back with my years of experience writing now and have a begrudging respect for the craftsmanship of the pilot and say, hey, I was wrong about a lot of stuff and they did so much well and I tip my cap to them and I see why it worked. What happened instead was I thought it was a borderline train wreck.
Yeah.
It was, look, they don't need me, okay? Like, they don't need me on board. No, they've already made their
already
billions.
Thing.
And so whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really have a relationship with anyone on the show, so that's fine. I don't think I need to preserve a relationship or be diplomatic. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
I really did. And I'll go into why, but the first reason why is, look, I get it's Hollywood's version of New York, but that to me the show it's the ultimate Nickelodeon sitcom.
Oh, yeah.
It's well not put. Real. It's so like, whereas Seinfeld, I felt, captured something about New York, and I think this is an important comparison for a type of writer that you are. Like, yes, you will fall into one of two camps. Are you a Friends person or are you a Seinfeld person?
Right.
Seinfeld captured something about New York, even though it was filmed out here. It had this East Coast edge and this East Coast vibe, and Jerry's apartment looked like a nice apartment, but not outlandishly so.
Not at
all. Kramer's apartment looked like a crazy guy's apartment. Elaine's apartment looked like someone with a roommate's apartment. George's apartment, his parents. I go on and on.
Yeah.
But Friends, to me, it's both a younger person's idealization of what a New York adulthood is like and an older person's romantic reminiscence of what a New York young person's lifestyle is like. But what it is not at all is an accurate representation of what anyone that age would think was going on. Because you mentioned Pulp Fiction came out. Like, the characters on that show, and so much of our lives, characters on that show are not talking about Pulp Fiction or Nirvana or Pearl Jam or grunge or any of that stuff that was, you know, they're listening to that, the theme song. So you go, these people were so out of step what was going on.
Yeah.
Both in New York and I think with anyone our age. And I, you know, and the sort of culmination of that, the first thing is that opening credit sequence where you go, they're in a mansion or something. Like, that's not New York. They're, what are they doing together? And so what I wanted to bring to you, because I know we're both watching this documentary, The Vow, the second part.
Yes.
About NXIVM. I hesitate to even say sex cult because now that feels, you know, judgmental of what they were doing and maybe they were doing conceptually. Who knows? But what Keith Raniere is Keith more Raniere. What people of that age and that time were like than any of those characters, the leader of that. That I remember that time, a lot of staying up till 2, 4 a.m., having these endless discussions of nuance and sort of what it means to be nervous and very philosophical.
Yeah.
And very philosophically looking at relationships and our place in the world. And, you know, our parents or grandparents had fought in wars. Where did we fit in? You know, we were this kind of in-between generation. And these people have no generational angst or awareness.
Yeah.
At all.
None.
So that's my opening statement.
Yeah. That
in terms of Gen X, which is what it supposedly captures, it is a complete failure.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, and I love your thought that it's like a Nickelodeon sitcom. Yeah. And I think that's true. And I think that's why it became so popular was because, yes, we were seniors in college and we could already, our bullshit detector was already way high. This appealed to the 15-year-old girl, you know, in high, like this was a huge mega hit with that crowd. And I think that's what sustained it for years to come. They just got people young and got them hooked. And then people just watched it forever.
Yeah.
But let's get into it. Let's get into the to the show itself. You already pointed out the ridiculous opening. Although, you know, weren't we all just kind of dancing in a fountain those days? it was crazy. But that's a weird thing. Like, I can't explain why that opening stuck and became iconic.
I don't know, but it did.
But then I had a thought while having those thoughts, like, why am I watching these people dance in a fountain? Like, what do I care? And then there was one close-up shot of Jennifer Aniston at the age of 25. And I was like, oh, yeah, more of her, please. Can we see her? Like, show her again. So I think for guys, probably that had something to do with why they're coming back.
Right.
Well, they're all very good looking. Look, I'm not denying that, and I'm not saying, oh, they're untalented or bad actors. I'm just saying that, like, go into the opening because I want to talk about how the show opens and the subject matter.
Okay. Mm. All right. So, and you may have to elaborate on that because I was, of course, blown away that they started off the entire series on a C-plus pun, which is Central Perk, their coffee shop. Like, that's the first thing we see. And we go in, and that's sort of just to start with that, it kind of tells you that, okay, warning, you know, like, mild goofiness ahead. Like, this is not going to be totally grounded. I was impressed in the first scene because I didn't realize that the characters were so fully formed from the start. Like, they were what they were. I'm not saying they were three-dimensional, awesome characters the whole way through the show, but they were already operating at like season four levels of Chandler's way of telling jokes.
His and first Ross's line was just so Chandler.
Yes.
Like, yeah,
and
I
Phoebe
agree with that.
Was weird. And, you know, But I forget, what were they talking about in that opening moment, Goldie?
So, okay, so a couple things. First, they're in this coffee shop, which I guess they didn't want to put him in a bar, you know. So, again, compare Seinfeld and Friends. Mm-hmm. The Seinfeld diner is so much more organic to what this is
mm-hmm.
than this coffee shop with this weird furniture. But okay, I'll look past that.
Yeah.
So what they're talking about, the first thing I've written down is that Monica is talking about having this date with a guy, Paul the wine guy.
Yes.
And the way they're talking about a date is like, if you know nothing about dating, like dates are you go out to dinner. And so they're talking about dinner, which already this seems like, are these people 40 or are they in their 20s?
Right.
Because you're in New York, you know, it was always like, we'll go see a movie, we'll go see a play, we'll go see an opera, we'll go see something, and then we'll go talk about it. Like, that was a New York I knew.
Yes.
Like, there was an activity, and then there was a dinner. Like, no 20-something was meeting someone for just dinner at that time. Like that,
wow, so that's a good point.
Struck me as absurd. And then there are multiple dissolves. They keep progressing in time. So I guess they must have said, like, let's film a long scene, take what works, and then pull it up. So then I was kind of struck by how light the laughter was.
Yeah. You
know, like, even in the show, people were not, like, totally grooving on the scene. That's fine. But so I guess the first thing they tried to do to be edgy was that David Ross's wife left him for a woman. So I guess you could say at that time,
edgy for '94.
Right. It was pretty progressive that she was a lesbian. Although, so here's my first major problem. And then Rachel walks in her wedding dress, which, you know, having talked to Rich Appel on the show, I'll fully credit Rich Appel that, like, weddings are always great in a pilot or a finale. Like, this is something he taught me, that it's like, this is a universal thing.
Yes.
You feel good about it. You know, there's a build up to something. Everyone gets what it is. The entry point is very easy. So I get why they did this. So, but here's where my problems begin. Because what I was looking for in this is any specificity about why Rachel did not want to marry this guy, why she ran away, anything that happened when she left, like what, like, so everyone's just sitting there, like, or how did you leave? Like, if someone comes in a wedding dress, I'd be like, wait, so you just left in the middle of your wedding?
Or it's like, make a bigger deal.
Is he still standing there? Is he waiting for you? Or like, it seemed like there was so much they could have done comedically that they didn't do. And I'm jumping ahead a little bit to follow this wedding story, but then
please.
I thought also, well, what's going to happen is this guy is going to come back, this Barry guy who she left at the altar, and make a passionate case to her maybe and say, like, I don't get it. You know, we had planned this life together. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. We've been dating for however many. Like, you get no backstory, which to me is not good writing. Like,
I
don't know how I'm supposed to feel about her leaving the wedding. Like, would you go, oh, my God, this guy's perfect for me. He's too perfect. And, like, I know I want to make a bunch of mistakes before I settle into that. Like, so you go, okay, that's something. Or you go, this is a disaster. Like, we've known each other since we were 14. I'm not the person I was when I was playing JV soccer, and I haven't had my adulthood yet. So you go, okay, but it's just like, he looks like Mr. Potato Head.
Right, it makes her unlikable, actually.
Yeah, they went for a weird joke because nobody really looks like Mr. Potato Head.
No, well, bald people.
Sorry. No, you don't. And nobody does. And I agree. One thing just to say that I did like, and you're right about all your points. One thing I did like in the first scene was that a lot happened. Like, you know, and sometimes pilots can get bogged down in talky scenes and they feel like if these characters talk enough, we're going to understand, you know, more who they are and what they want and all that kind of stuff. And granted, you're right that I could have used more talking from Rachel about what happened at the wedding, but I
did reaction from people seeing someone in a dress. Like, that's astounding.
Yes. Yeah. That would be a shock, but they did have the, you know, the Ross thing, his wife left him for a woman. And then right on the heels of that, they had, and Rachel's left her wedding, which, thinking globally, was smart, a shrewd move, because, and you even get to it later in this episode, but this show really leaned into the Ross and Rachel relationship, will they or won't they? Yeah. So having them both kind of set adrift on the same day in the pilot, I think is certainly, you'd have to say in retrospect, given how popular that couple became, was a good move. So
yeah, and look, okay, yeah. I recognize it is incredibly difficult to do a show about an ensemble of six people who are not a family. And I think, you know, I think they did a lot of good work in that. Like, I don't think these people seem like real friends, but they definitely each had a corner and each had sort of a specific thing they were doing. I think to me, Phoebe is the closest thing actually to a real character who,
yes,
as bizarre as she was, but I did know kind of spacey people. Like, I remember the phrase space cadet being kind of a big thing around that time. And she reminded me of that persona. Getting back to Ross, like, has anyone ever underplayed the agony of a dissolved marriage more? Like, he seemed slightly bummed. Like, he found out, he went to a concert and he found out his tickets were for a different night. That was his level of angst over the whole ending of the marriage. And for that to be the foundation of, like, oh my God, my life's ruined, I didn't buy it. Like, I didn't feel anything, I guess, is the summation of my annoyance.
Yes.
I felt nothing watching it.
And I agree with that, and I, for a couple of reasons. But something you said about Ross, it's interesting because he did kind of underplay that sort of marriage breaking up agony. Yet he discovered the face that he would keep on the for the entire whiny show. Like, Ross always had that face of, like, I've just been slightly hurt, you know, and I want to talk to you about it, and you're not helping me. You're making witty remarks. But so, okay, so they have all this stuff happens in the first scene. Then we go back to, as you pointed out, just an all-time unrealistic apartment.
Right,
you
know, and that's not, like, look, we don't need to go over that. Everyone's
no,
been there.
That just happens.
Yes.
And I feel like, I again, I'll skip around a little bit here, but something that they didn't know yet on the show, because it was the pilot, is that the show works much better when they're all together, for whatever reason. It just does. You'd think, like, keeping 5-6 people alive in a scene is kind of difficult, but this episode felt like it had an A story and a B story, you know,
and
like
a
the
C even.
Yes, a small C. But like getting the guys off in their own, in Ross's new apartment to build his furniture felt like a very
awful.
Like, yeah, that was just like a very kind of we're just eking some kind of trope together here. But what they didn't know is it probably would have been much more interesting just to have everybody in the giant apartment, which is basically what they did for the rest of the show. And sometimes that can be because the pilot, we should say, was written by the creators, Kaufman and Crane. And sometimes shows change immensely from the pilot to episode two because in the interim, you have gained an entire writing staff.
Yes.
Right. So things can change, and it might be interesting at some point to go look at Friends, you know, episode two and see if maybe it changed. But I agree on your overall note about not feeling anything, and I couldn't agree more, especially.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
When we think back to when we talked about Cheers, like that show had so many honest moments and so many great jokes. The thing with Friends that stood out to me, and you mentioned the writing, and I'll have to sadly echo that. I don't remember a single joke or bit from this friend's pilot, having just watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
Whereas the Cheers pilot, you can point to like half a dozen things that you remember. That joke was incredibly well written. This coach line was amazing. You know, Norm comes in with his signature thing in the first step. There were just so many things to look at. This was, it's like when you have a charming cousin who kind of annoys you but delights the rest of the family. That's sort of how I felt watching Friends. I'm like, these people are undeniably attractive and charming and, air quotes, delightful. But I'm just not, I'm not connecting really with any of these characters.
Well, put the Diane's blown engagement and how that's played and portrayed by the actors and written versus this generic, two generic blown up marriages where you just kind of go, okay, like you actually felt for Diane. They seemed like a real couple. And I'll even go back to, I think, our first podcast episode talking about The Office. I cried with Jim and Pam and where they wound up. Right. And it's not like I'm incapable of getting emotional.
Sucked up in the romance.
In characters. But the second moment that to me just felt like very underwritten was Rachel says the reason she came there is you're the only person I know in the city. So, okay. And then Monica says, and I wasn't invited to the wedding. And then Rachel says, yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't notice. And that's
it's like end scene. Yeah.
That's it.
There's no, like, to me.
Yeah, that sets up an interesting.
What's the real drama in there? That, like, just go, hey, fuckface.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to you in 6 years.
Yeah.
You're getting married and you don't, and then now things aren't working out and you're coming to me like, what is happening with you? Are you insane? Like,
yes.
It seems like. There needs to be some explanation.
Well, at the very least, that sets up an easy emotional moment later where they can do what they had and just have her bring that up. You know, you didn't even invite me to your wedding. And she says, sort of a version of, about that. But so it sets up even for later at the end of Act 3 for them to there to be one emotional moment of like, hey, that really hurt me.
You know, I don't know how I got so swept up in this. But the reason I left was it was all his friends and his family and my family. And then I keep going back to our friendship and going, that was the one moment in my life I felt happy. And maybe it's crazy, but I want to live in that world, even if it's a fantasy, rather than this world, which is what I've gotten sucked up in. And already you would be feeling anything.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's a great note.
I'm feeling
We could have saved this show.
No. Well, what's so crazy is then when I try to do it,
like, I was going to say
anything, it never works, and everyone hates it.
Where was Johnny story time on Dads? We could have used some of these notes.
No, I know. That to me just seemed like a blown opportunity because it was in there anyway to get. Something about a relationship to hang your hat on and what you're looking for and what you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
And why this isn't just people saying words.
I know. It was a lot of like, now you dance. Dance. And the people just liked the dances, you know, over
and
time.
And then like, you can just move into the apartment where it's like you and I having lived in New York.
Yeah.
There's no free beds.
No.
Yeah.
In New York City.
I have this free room right
there. No. Like, I watched that documentary about Jeremy Lin, that new one on HBO.
Me too. That was great.
Oh, right. And I was at that game.
He couldn't get a bed in the city in the middle of
Linsanity.
Yes. He stayed on a too small couch. Now, wait, let's backtrack here. JC, which game did you go to?
His breakout one with the Knicks.
It was
my birthday.
Was it against the Lakers? When's your birthday?
It was February 5th. So the game was on the 6th or the 4th.
Okay.
And
that was like his first, his first game. Maybe against the Nets.
Yes.
But he had already done it once.
I was at the first one.
Oh, okay, so that was the Nets.
Yeah, and he spoke to the crowd afterwards, and I was sobbing. I mean, sobbing. Stu didn't understand because he's like, "But this isn't hockey." But I was like, can't believe we're watching this game. I cannot believe we're here.
I know. You should watch this documentary, JC. It's on HBO. It's called like 38 in the Garden or something like that.
Yeah.
And it does make you very emotional. And they had testimony after testimony of Asian actors, Asian personalities, and just you can really see and hear what it meant.
It meant a lot.
And it was crazy. I was thinking because we had that top five months ago about top five sporting events we wish we had been at.
Yes.
And I think I would have, after watching this thing, it would have amended it to the Lakers-Knicks game where Lynn went off and beat Kobe, because that was pretty special.
Yeah,
I got goosebumps.
There you go.
But contrast that.
Yes.
And that's a big New York story.
Yes.
With the show we're talking about that's supposedly like a signature New York show.
I know. Yeah. They didn't.
Because I don't even know how much further we have to go specifically. In it. Like, I'm almost willing to skip down to Monica's date.
There was a spit take in her date.
Yeah.
They did an unironic spit take, which in the mid-90s is crazy. Like, if you're going to do a spit take anytime after 1980, there better be a twist on it. Not just you're hearing something surprising and spitting out your water. So that was kind of crazy to me that it was just a straight spit take.
Wow.
And Goldie, we talked about when Monica was at work talking about her new boyfriend.
Okay, the story is basically this Paul the Wine guy, she's agreed to go on a date with him. Then the guy tells her he hasn't had sex in 2 years, basically because he's had trouble getting it up. They don't say that, but they use language around it. And then then when they go back to their apartment and like it finally happens, he's like, thank you for everything you've done for me. And then she goes to work at this catering thing and she talks about Paul the Wine guy with this other female caterer, and that person says, like, you know, I'm the one who got him back on track. Yeah. And she learns that, like, Paul the Wine guy, just this is a line he gives to everyone. But the line that the other chef says is, you know, before me, he had no snap in his turtle.
Oh, and my like, God. That's
I was
awful.
Like, I'm gonna break my television. Like, that's just to have a character say that, like the anyone in the 90s would describe anything that way, like they had no snap in their no one talked like that. Like it was enraging. That was
a nadir. That was not great. And then what I was surprised by, and again, it's not my thing. And I know, Goldie, you just said, you know, Jim and Pam from The Office, when they get together, it's emotional and we're all into that. And I agree. But it's not generally my thing in sitcoms to have there be love stories. But they really put their eggs in that basket in the pilot. Like, they had a very weird, you know, Ross and Rachel had a moment where Ross confesses, like, you know, I always had a crush on you. And she's like, I knew. And, well, how about if I asked you out sometime? Yeah, I might like that. And then they had a moment later where Rachel was sitting by herself in the new giant apartment in totally different clothes that we never saw. Like, it seemed weird that she was suddenly in different clothes. Like, whose clothes? Monica's clothes, maybe? But she's sitting there staring out the window as some kind of, like, you know, Natalie Imbruglia type song plays. But the point is that they took the time to insert this sort of 14-second slow push on her wordless with music in their pilot, banking on this romance that, I have to admit, paid off for them. It didn't pay off for me watching the pilot, but it ultimately paid off for the series because, again, Ross and Rachel was like all anyone wanted to talk about.
Well, there's also one last thing we haven't talked about was the unlikability of this Rachel character and her complete ignorance of jobs and that she might have to get one. And it was, I guess, played as a joke, but you would...
Very unlikable.
I know.
Big time.
You know, and so much of the 90s and the 80s and 90s was, like, I had a job from the time I was 14. Like,
same.
Everyone was hustling all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it just was such... It was so false. Like, again, you could have said... The reason I went up to the aisle is like, look, I've been working since I was 13 years old and finally there was a way out with Barry, you know, and I could have been this kept person and had the house in the suburbs and never have had to go through this horrible stage of life that you're all going through. I could have just fast forwarded to the good stuff. And now I realize I don't want to do that. Even that would be a kind of emotional explanation for what happened rather than just like, you know, daddy can't pay your bills.
Right.
And it's like, I'm learning.
Right. Mm. I have to grow up. And then she buys the boots. And then you're like, you idiot.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Yeah. Another interesting thing, apropos of our Kanye jokes earlier, this show, like Seinfeld, three of the main characters were supposed to be Jewish. Like, well, that's what's a little weird.
They never really say it.
They don't. But when you meet, like, because it's Rachel Green, which is the green is the code word ambiguous. This person might be Jewish last name, by the way, if you're ever seeing something out there. Yeah. So she is. It's Monica Geller and Ross Geller.
Oh.
So they're brother and sister, and when you meet their parents, it's like Elliot Gould and you know some other kind of Jewish actress. But it's just interesting, and also because I'm sure the Rachel stuff with the shopping and not knowing how to do anything, that's like, I'm sure when they wrote it, they're like, oh, everybody has a Jewish American princess friend who's like this, whose daddy's money and da, 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 da. But somehow that's the character we all fell in love with.
It honestly just may be a reflection of these creators being raised differently than I was, and that maybe these were universal types and tropes to them, and I'm just not recognizing it. And again, like, they don't need me. They've been unbelievably successful.
Yeah.
I take off my hat. It's better than anything I'll ever do. I get that. But do I like that pilot? And do I think it's a good demonstration of what you should do in a pilot? Mostly no. I think the one thing that you said was the integrated banter of the six of them kind of worked. But I would say the specifics of that banter I was not particularly enjoying, and I don't think I would have enjoyed at the time.
To me, it was well cast, certainly well performed. I mean, they squeezed soup from a stone on a lot of those lines that shouldn't have worked because of their performances. But yeah, sadly, as writers, I think we have to kind of come back to the writing and say, you know, maybe let's take another pass at that pilot. but
the
now,
audacity.
So it's official. We will not be being invited to the Kaufman Queen Christmas party this year.
That's fine.
But so anyway, that's another one in the books. We got the Friends pilot. If you guys have any like awesome pilot suggestions or anything that you want us to watch and kind of talk about it from a writer's standpoint, please email us at atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com.
Oh, I have a suggestion.
Yeah, what?
The Frasier pilot.
So send it in the email.
Let's go through proper channels.
Sorry.
The Frasier pilot is going to be like a fucking symphony.
Yeah.
We do that next. That's a great suggestion.
Okay,
that's
cool.
That's a good one. All right, cool. And now let's get into a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
We built this, Goldie. We built this, Goldie, on our podcast. Built this, Goldie.
I had a lot going on before the podcast.
Made him. We created this, Goldie. All right.
This condescending song you've written for me.
I love that's how you take it. All right, JC, this was your category this week. Tell the folks what we're going to be discussing.
Top 5 NBA players of all time.
Yeah. You know, I love, because the NBA has obviously just started right now. We're all very excited about that. I did find in writing this list that it was like, it's hard not to be just, as Goldie would say, chalk.
Yeah.
They're just certain players.
I have one that like one kind of disruptive one, but I think the rest is
good. All right. So Goldie, it's your list next week, right? So let's have you go last.
Okay.
All right. I'll go first. Okay. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, number 5 for me, a homer pick that I fully believe is Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Larry Joe Bird. Watch his highlights. Kid.
Kid.
All right, number 4, I have LeBron.
All right.
LeBron is somebody who I have gone through phases of really disliking because he is so good and the Celtics would often end up playing and losing to him. So that is why I do not particularly like him, but I love everything he does off the court, all the stuff that he says and sets up. He seems like a kind of a great philanthropic civil rights leader kind of figure. So LeBron
is my friend. Like I get the greatness, but I also he always had someone else there.
I guess that's a fair point.
Nice.
Number 3, Magic Johnson. I had to put him above Bird because those 80s Lakers outdueled us, and Magic was a killer Oh my God, he was such a winner. Couldn't shoot from the outside at all, but was still somehow the third best player ever, in my opinion.
Yes.
Number two, Kobe Bryant.
Right.
Love. Wow. I loved Kobe. I think he's an on-court psychopath. I loved watching him win. Like, I feel like even as a Celtics fan, I loved his meteoric rise to being awesome. I loved all of his highlights along the way. And then to score, what did he score? 60 in his final game? It was incredible.
Yeah.
So I love Kobe. Mamba, R.I.P.
Mamba, yeah.
And number one, of course, Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Okay.
That's it.
So I weirdly, I created the list, but I interpreted it differently as my top five.
That's fine.
So my number five... My very first jersey playing basketball, middle school, I was the center.
Joe Barry Carroll.
Robert Parrish.
Yeah, geez.
Double zeros. Yeah. Boom, geez. Boom, boom, boom.
Now, did you have Parrish on the Warriors or Celtics?
Celtics.
Okay, nice.
Yes.
Rainbow J.
Yeah. Love that. Love it.
My number four, this was very hard to narrow down, but I just chose Steph Curry for my number four.
Love him.
My number three is kind of out of left field, but love this man. Latrell Sprewell. He played for the Warriors. He played for the Knicks.
Yeah,
and
we know.
And he's just so scrappy.
Choked his coach, PJ.
PJ, exactly.
Who might have...
Maybe deserved it.
Might have provoked it.
Might have deserved it somehow.
So he strikes me as someone who's a lot like me.
Yeah.
Who, Carlissimo?
Chokeable.
Yeah. Got a mouth.
Pushing, yeah. Number two, Allen Iverson.
Oh, artificial intelligence. I love him.
Yes, and then number one, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Okay. But yes.
Can't have
so I did not interpret it the way JC did. I interpreted that we were supposed to say who, in our opinion, are actually the top five players of all time. And I'm a little shocked. I have a very different list from Alec, who I think interpreted it kind of similarly.
Yeah. Oh boy. I think so too.
I'm in trouble.
Number five is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Ooh,
you know how.
Nice.
All-time leading scorer.
Boring.
Yeah.
I know you don't like him, but he was incredible. And the longevity.
Corpse of Kareem.
Oh my God.
Number four, 100 points in a game.
Oh, Wilt.
Average 50 points one season, Wilt Chamberlain.
Yep.
You can't say he was not in the top five.
I don't know. He's playing against used car salesmen.
Oh,
okay.
Geez.
But here's where there's some slippage, because number three, I think, is Steph Curry legitimately.
Oh, yeah.
I put him above Bird. I put him above Magic. I put him above LeBron. He's now had these... two separate teams with like an in-between difficult time. He stayed with the same team and he brought him back.
Yeah.
Got him a fourth championship.
Yes.
Love Steph.
I put Jordan at two. And
Whoa!
Number one, who I cannot believe you left off your list.
I know who you're going to put.
Shame on you.
I know who you're going to put.
11 rings.
I know.
Just passed away. I guess you've forgotten him already.
No, I have not.
Billiam Russell.
That's a fun list. I thought about Bill. I felt bad not having him on there.
You should.
I know. Well, anyway, those were fun lists. Fun category, JC. Goldie,
what do you
have for us next week?
The top five things you can eat at an Italian restaurant.
Ooh.
Oh, I'll meet you anytime.
So you go to an Italian restaurant. These are apps. These are desserts.
Italian
these are entrees.
Restaurant.
It's primi. It's secondi.
Ooh. Insalati?
Insalatis. Antipastis.
Dolcis.
The dolcis are in there.
Yep. I love it.
Cool.
I love it.
Awesome.
Very different. All right. And now let's close the show this week. On a high note.
We built this Goldie.
Oh, God.
We built this Goldie on a podcast. Built this Goldie.
Yes, I love it. It got funnier each time, admit it, Goldie. All right, I'll get the high note out of the way quickly. my high note this week is a man named Michael Maguire and coach John Calipari. So I don't know if you saw this picture online. Michael Maguire is a coal miner in Kentucky, and he, at the end of his shift, raced out of the mine to pick up his son to go watch a University of Kentucky game, and he's at the game absolutely covered in soot and in his work clothes. So, like, they raced. He raced to get his child there to watch this game. So John Calipari who's the coach of Kentucky, saw this man in the stands, was touched by it because his father was a coal miner in West Virginia, and he's now given this man and his family like these VIP seat treatment, you know, whole thing, meet the team, all that. So I just thought that's
ready
story.
For 500 coal miners at the next game.
I know. Covered in soot.
Exact same thing.
Yeah. They're all going to try it. Anyway, I thought if it happens just once, I think it's a very nice story.
Yeah, get ready for coal miners everywhere at all events trying to take advantage. That's what's about to happen.
That's funny.
All right. High note. Who's got one?
Well, I'll go. I'm going to say the dinner. For me, it was that dinner was
nice.
So great.
That was fun. Dinner, under the stars.
Yeah. Outdoor, nice weather. You guys were hilarious. Getting to meet everybody in person and hugging them was really nice for me.
Oh, yeah. They were not shy with the hugs with you. Goldie and I got fist bumps.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I hope we get to do it again some other time. Sorry, Alec.
What an idea.
And Goldie.
Maybe
sorry
next
to both
time
of you.
It's pizzas.
Yeah. All right, Goldie, what do you got?
So my high note is the NBA season started again, and as a Bostonian who lives in Los Angeles, there's nothing more enjoyable than when the Lakers are terrible and in total disarray.
Yep.
And this, they may not win a game. Yeah. They are in real friggin' trouble.
Yes.
And I am reading every single article I can find with any inside information. Yeah. And you can see my dog Lloyd has
come in on this.
I cannot wait for the rest of the season. And each game, like, I don't know if you ever tune into the local sports afterwards where they have James Worthy who agonizes when they lose.
So this
is going to be my entertainment for the next 6 months.
I know. So now that the Jets are good, we get this at least.
That's funny.
All right. Well, another fun episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank
and
you.
We will talk to you again next week.
No, we won't.
Disgusting display.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Who is that for?